Welcome to the Answer Podcast. People sometimes say you should eat a mic, and I will eat a mic made of sugar.
This is going to take a while.
Hello and welcome to the Answer Podcast. My name is Paweł Burza, and I am joined by Kelpie today. And of course, by Paweł Mielniczuk, my friend and co-host, the art director for Project Hadar. Hello, Kelpie.
Today, we'll dive into a magical world of motion capture, together with Paulina Lędzion, motion capture producer, and Tomasz Kowalczyk, motion capture lead.
It's going to be a great episode. Can't wait. So let's meet our guests. Paulina, Tomek, welcome to the podcast, officially. This is going to be one of my favorite episodes, I can tell you that already, because we're talking about motion capture. And could you guys, to start, introduce yourselves?
Hi, everyone. I'm Paulina. I've been at CDP for almost 4 years now. And together with Tomek, we are in charge of the mock-up team.
So hello, everyone. I'm Tomas, and I'm motion capture lead. And I'm working with people in funny suits for around 15 years.
Wow. 15 years. That puts it into perspective.
It's a dinosaur.
So yeah, yeah, that's what we call old res here. Like they're dinosaurs. They remember everything. So let's start from the basics. Why do we do motion capture? Like we have so many animators. There's so many, you know, mocap studios that we could potentially work with or rent and stuff like that. But we have our own studio. Why do we decide to do that?
Because it's cool. The first things first. I think the most important thing that motion capture is a tool for animators, and we can record a real person, people, and get their natural movements, some natural, I don't know, breathing. And even the greatest animator is not able to get it by hand in, reasonable time. Mm-hmm. So let's record it. Let's have it. And then you can fix things and adjust only small parts and not spend time on reanimate and start everything from scratch and do things that you can record much faster with really, really talented people. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And Paulina, tell us, so how does mocap actually different from traditional acting?
Oh, I would say there is a lot of differences. First of all, you need to imagine everything. You don't have really like props in a, let's say, general understanding. You don't have a camera. You don't have a, let's say, TV set that you usually have when you're like in a film or a theater. So basically, I would say imagination is the key point. Usually like new people that are coming to mockup, they are, you know, I would say not confused, but it's kind of a new thing to them that you need to really imagine a lot of stuff like props, set, where you are, setting, maybe some blocking, even some people, like the character. You don't have any costume. So it's really, I would say, playing with your imagination. So that's, I would say, it's like the most important factor that is kind of like differs from the traditional acting.
Yeah, I'm happy that you mentioned cameras, because cameras are there, but they're placed in so many different places that you're not looking into one specific, like I am doing right now. I'm looking at one specific camera. You don't do that, and you don't act in front of the camera. You act with your whole body in a space, which is like super interesting if you think about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So how we built our own first space? How this whole thing, mockup studio in CD Projekt Red, evolved?
Okay, so let's dig really, really deep. And we started with old, ancient solutions with a huge PC on the back and kind of funny suit.
Attached to a person?
Exactly. Oh, that really? That's actually, it looks like like a mech, and the actor was inside of that. So the movements weren't kind of super accurate because you had to fight with the costume, but that was, you know, before The Witcher 1. I mean, for The Witcher 1, and later we moved to our first optical system. Probably we'll have a chance to explain what's optical system more in a minute. Then we realized as a company that okay, that's really nice, nice tool. So let's record running, for example, and it's much easier when you can make more than two steps, because by the way, the first studio I was in a really, really tiny place, and right now in this place is a toilet. so you can see and imagine how big was that. Yeah. So the second stage was slightly bigger, and before Cyberpunk, we decided to go with a full tech, kind of big studio, and we are talking about the third one, and somewhere in the future, probably, we will have the fourth one. But we'll see how it goes.
That's really cool. And it's also for those watching, like the space in which we do the podcast is just we're neighbors with MoCap. So they're next door neighbors to us. So all the cool like recording stuff happens in this building.
Yeah. And it took you a little bit to invite us guys. So yeah, I don't know.
Plus I want to mention, I think they're the only team that actually have Sebastian from the podcast on their walls. So they have like a printout from the podcast, but we'll get to that. So we know that the MoCap team is watching for sure.
Yes. Maybe because we are so close. Maybe in the future. So that's why we are in a, not first.
Yeah, but of course, we always wanted to invite you guys because MoCap, whenever we do anything for partners or if we have like family or friends day and we have people coming to the studio, we always invite them to the MoCap, which is based on the people that I've talked with that I showed the MoCap space to. They're like, oh my God, MoCap is so cool. It's incredible. Like, this is how it's made. And you always do some type of like little presentation where you actually have someone on stage in a suit doing things, and the performance is later translated into in-engine stuff, which is like mind-blowing for people because they're like, hey, that's Geralt right there, but that's a different person. How is that possible? So let's talk about the stage, the setup that you have right now, and kind of course without going into like trade secrets and stuff like that, because I know each motion capture studio does things their own way. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about like the general setup and kind of the day-to-day operations or shoots that you do for specific titles and all that jazz. Mm-hmm.
So I can start about technicalities and later mm-hmm. maybe you can explain how it goes during shooting. We are talking about motion capture stage, mocap, and so on. So let's explain what's that. We are talking about kind of big space. It's a kind of big room with a truss around with 74 cameras. And as you mentioned, we are recording everything at the same time. This is not like we are changing camera. Oh, and right now... this is this one. We are recording from this one and probably in a second change it. But we are recording every single place, every single point of environment at the same time. So we can really, really easy change the cameras. We can adjust it later because we are recording 3D animations at once. Our current volume, we call it volume, so the place where actor is visible, so we can cover his movements with the cameras. And our current volume is around 15 meters by 7 meters. So this is the place where we can record, you know, walking, jumping, running, all kind of cutscenes when, spoiler alert, Jackie dies. So everything we can record in that place. So it's kind of big room, definitely bigger than the current toilets. And we can definitely do a lot of things, mm-hmm. everything for Cyberpunk. Was recorded in the current stage.
Yeah. But it's not only the room, but you also need all those tools and elements to build scenographies basically during, right? So how much of, like, what was this facility around the MoCap studio that allows us to do that?
So we have just changing room for actors, that's obvious, a green room, so place where actors can spend time when they are not...
Green room.
Yeah, it's called green room or lounge room.
Break room,
like in TV and stuff like that. I know the color is not green, but yeah. Green room is the official naming.
This is not a green screen inside. No. This is also, I think, important thing. Yeah, on our stage, there is no green green screen. We are not rotoscoping anyone. We are not changing the environment. We are recording people.
It's very gray.
Yeah, it's actually it's very gray. But to continue about facility and most funny part. So the kind of huge work workshop with a lot of work workbenches, 3D printers, and I don't know what else.
I would say it's a playground for people who actually like to play with tools.
So
we actually have like a part of our team, you know, which is responsible for creating props. So it's kind of like their own playground. They just spend like the whole days there just creating stuff.
Yeah. So what, for example, what do they build?
Whatever you want.
Okay, so I think the good example maybe in a, that kind of famous tank for Cyberpunk, because we had to record the whole sequence inside. So the construction, you know, we checked the construction because it had to be really stable, because, you know, all the romance scene inside had to be there and had to be safe. So we prepared everything. We had to check that it's safe, it's stable, it's not interrupting the actors, because they are in really intimate scene positions and things like, oh, you know, here is a I don't know, piece of wood or additional foam, might be something, you know, problematic for them. So we had to check it.
So you have to like construct things in terms of like, let's say a space, but you also create things that actors can use in terms of like holding them, right?
Exactly. So I imagine those things need to perfectly match what will be visible in the game, like the geometry in the game. But at the same time, you need to make sure that all the cameras still see those people, right? So it's not the real tank.
I would say it's a challenge to kind of build all of the, let's say, closed spaces. So if you think, for example, about a lift or just elevator, this kind of stuff, you have like a bunch of people there. It's really tricky to build it because the markers that are on the body need to be visible by all of the cameras around, right? So it's kind of like very, I would say, challenging to kind of come up with a stuff, okay, how we should build this, how we should kind of, you know, what materials should we use so they are not, giving any light, so the camera can actually see the markers. So it's very, I would say, challenging sometimes to kind of come up with something that it's useful, but also very safe. Yeah. And, you know, it's basically a representation of the model that is in the game, as you're saying. We are kind of discovering the 3D printing right now, let's say.
Super cool.
Yeah. So probably Tommy can say more about it. But we've checked that it's proving to be working. And yeah, it's actually pretty cool because you can actually print stuff that it's
nice.
That is basically the same prop or asset that you actually see in a game. So if you're drinking from like some cup or, I don't know, you're using some other tool, it's actually looking the same. So it's also easier for the actors to kind of imagine, okay, I am using this thing. It's not like a piece of a box or piece of a, you know, wood that I need to kind of imagine to be an axe or something else, but it's actually a let's say, real thing, right? Yeah.
Or at least a replica.
Yeah, replica, exactly. Yeah.
And it's exactly from the game, so it's, so we can print also, I don't know, the runic signs or something like that, so it's the actual thing, and it's proper size, and more or less sometimes proper weight, but as I said, safety first. Safety first. So sometimes we prefer to reduce the weight just to be sure that everything is fine and safe, and stunt performers or actors not harming themselves.
I would say what can be interesting sometimes that we have actually a creative, let's say, power to design some of the assets in a game, because it happens that we record some of the animations that are basically being recorded in advance. So some of the assets are not really designed yet. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have situations, not often, but sometimes when asset artist is, you know, reaching out to mock-up team and they're basically like, hey, what did you use for recording this? Because now I have to design it. So it's kind of the other way around that it should be, but, you know.
An example, of course, and this is the spider bot from Quest with Maelstrom. We got information that, okay, we had to record A machine in a box, and what kind of box? We don't know yet.
It's, okay.
It will be designed in the future. So we bought a bucket in one of the stores and said, okay, it's more or less like that. We record everything after, let's say, half a year. We'll say, was like, okay, this is the time we are preparing the proper box. So do you have the bucket? Because we will, you know, measure it. And recreate everything. So that was another way.
So I guess there's a lot of creative process. Like you have to instantly figure something out. Like that's often happen that you have to act quickly and just, you know, something's missing, some prop is missing. There's some kind of unforeseen scene you have to record and you have to come up with props.
I would say it depends. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, usually we get like a list of props that we need to prepare mm-hmm. in advance. But sometimes if you're actually playing, if you're, you know, playing with each other, like you are performing a scene, some stuff may actually come up that you weren't ready for. And mm-hmm. the director can say, hey, I really like this. So whatever, let's use something else. And then mm-hmm. it's a moment when you actually need mm-hmm. to kind of figure out the stuff on the fly, right? Like, okay, I need this or that. And then, yeah, we need to act fast.
Is there room for improvisation during
oh,
recording?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
Yes.
I think we should bring up the walk story from Cyberpunk.
Yeah.
You guys needed a walk to make food in, right?
Yes, there was a case that we had additional half an hour or something like that. And we've recorded everything and said, okay, we have some spare time and we have one additional animation we would like to record, you know, a vendor somewhere on the market who's preparing, you know, food in the wok. Nice. and yes, and what? And we need a wok. But how? I mean, this is not like a cube, or this is not a regular pan so we can borrow from our canteen. It's a walk. So we started to, you know, we had a half an hour and started to you know, run looking for something which was similar. And we realized that our lamp had a similar shape. So we, you know, we remove all unnecessary elements. And we said, okay, is it good enough? It's perfect. You know, this is exactly the shape we need. So yeah, feel free. Nice. I mean, thank you very much, dear
Think
architect.
Of like a half a sphere that just covers the lamp
exactly.
And kind of, you know, makes the light a little bit less, you know, hardcore. So just take it apart and use it. And actually, if you think about it, it does actually look like a wok. Yeah,
but okay. I guess this is a rare case, right? And usually the preparation goes way back before the session starts, right? So how that works? Well, how do you prepare and collect all the data? How to build props? Who to invite on session, etc.? How it works?
So I would say it's a lot of cooperation with other teams, especially with animation, cinematic design, mm-hmm. Also with gameplay teams, of course, because like in the beginning you prototype a lot. So basically you record a combat style animations, let's say you can just check your ideas, see if you need to improve something or maybe change, record something else. So I would say in the beginning, it's basically about hearing the expectations and listening to what they actually want to record. So it starts mm-hmm. from the meeting. It starts from basically, you know, requesting the other team requesting the animation. Mm-hmm. So they come to us, or we reach out to them sometimes if we know that, you know, the project needs animation mm-hmm. Being recorded or something. So they reach out to us, let's say, and then we talk, okay, what needs to be recorded? Is it gameplay animation? Is it open world? Is it cinematic scene? And then we kind of start talking. We get the, you know, list of the props that we need to mm-hmm. record, list of animation. Later in the process, first of all, we of course kind of decide, okay, is it the stunt material? Is it the actor's material? Mm-hmm. Should mm-hmm. we maybe work with some other crew to maybe prepare some of the stuff? Like one of the examples is the scene that was presented in the Unreal
tech demo
yeah. that we recorded. It was the scene in the beginning when they're in the carriage and, yeah. you know.
With the merchant and
the
as Tomek would call it, washing machine.
Washing machine.
Hamster in washing machine.
It was kind of like that because we actually worked with external crew to work on the, you know, the whole like piece of that thing. And actually we were shaking the thing to actually record the real movement of that, right? So then we were in the beginning kind of, we knew that, okay, this is the kind of stuff that we need to record. It's very like heavy. There's a lot of prep time that we need to, you know, put into it. Of course, the other thing is if you really actually have this time for preparation, mm-hmm. but you know, that's on the side.
And what kind of advance they need to book Mockup Studio? So how much sooner the team has to reach out to you to let you know about?
Because you guys are busy. Like.
Yeah, we are.
Yes.
Yeah, I should probably answer that question because it was, I would say, different when we worked on the one project, mm-hmm. but since we kind of switched to the multi-project development, it's been a little bit busier. So that's why kind of we also try to, you know, invest, let's say, more in mock-up team. And as Tomek said, some new things are coming. So, you know, I would say it's busy. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Few months in advance, for sure.
Few months. Yeah. Okay.
We're talking about months.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think then, we also should kind of put it into perspective. Mm-hmm. If you think about how many recordings, because you recorded everything, like you said, in the mock-up studio for Cyberpunk, how many recording days is that if you put it into kind of people's heads so they know the large scale and volume of this thing?
So when we are talking about Cyberpunk, that was more than 300. So 300, to be more precise, that was actually 311 shooting days. Yes, I was counting.
That's almost a full year of shooting, pretty much.
Yes.
If you think, take that into account.
And that was only one project. Also, we had a chance to record some things for a Gwent. So that was also the part of our job. And right now, Siri and Witcher and let's say other projects. So that's why you can, you know, multiply this 311 days by by other projects. Yeah. So that's why we are kind of fully packed.
Yeah,
I feel like at this moment I need to just tell you about Tomek's superpower. Because Tomek remembers almost all of the stuff that we recorded on every shoot. Yeah. So basically, he's like a bank of like animations recorded. So sometimes we have
Mr.
people...
Library.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Actually, yes, I remember my first shooting day. But yeah, that was kind of helpful because sometimes different teams recorded different animations. And it's like, yeah, we need this or that. And I said, give me 2 seconds because I'm pretty sure we've recorded something like
somewhere.
That.
Right, yeah.
And right. I can give you the data.
Nice.
So yeah, that I use that superpower. I hope in a good way.
Going back to the shooting days, is it like that you know, on Monday you're recording Cyberpunk, on Tuesday you're recording Witcher, etc. Is every day a different session, or there's like, because building these props, for example, setting up the studio, does it take some additional time?
It might be. I mean, yeah, that's we can record everything, let's say, the whole week for Witcher or first day, Cyberpunk, Witcher, or something for, I don't know, marketing purposes, and so on. So we are fully flexible and we can adjust. So this is not a big deal for us, and we can prepare ourselves. Also, I think really important thing is that we are recording Witcher, so we need swords, a lot of swords for Witcher game. So we have them. For Cyberpunk, we had a lot of different guns. Some props are prepared in advance because we know that, I don't know, we'll have a blacksmith. So we need an anvil and a hammer. We will have someone who is fishing. So probably a rod will be kind of necessary. So we can do it in advance and later. Yeah, we need to record a blacksmith. Yeah, cool. Okay, we can do that because we don't have to prepare it because we've done it before the project.
Whenever you visit mocap, you can tell more or less what they're working on because kind of before you enter the stage, if you look to the right, you see that there are actually different things. Like Cyberpunk times, it was just full of weapons. It was just guns, different guns, knives, you know, katana, stuff like that. Now, if you enter, it's just like, it's totally different. You see a lot of swords, you see even stuff like, I've seen like us having like shields there, a rake, for example, stuff like that. So there's a lot of like different things and also things which are just things that don't resemble anything. Mannequins, like it can be anything.
Animal parts. I remember those crazy legs I think a long time ago, right? I think in The Witcher 3, like this additional leg setup that you put your legs in.
Leg extensions.
Some kind of leg extensions.
Yeah.
Arm extensions.
We still have them.
Yeah, we still have them.
It's crazy. That's why when you enter this place, you're feeling like Alice in the Wonderland, you know?
Yeah,
all the toys.
Everything's pretty much possible.
Beautiful.
What I also really like is I feel like the props, which help actors do certain motions which they wouldn't be able to do. Like, think, for example, like a sword without a blade, just a hilt for it, so you can actually stab someone and that looks realistic. And of course, you later recreate that in engine and it looks like a whole sword, but you're just using the hilt to kind of like pierce through someone, which I feel like you also need to be thinking in a, like you guys mentioned, a very creative way on how you do things, because it's like, how do we improvise this so it looks realistic? Well, then we need to cut the blade off and then it's going to work, right? But there's probably more examples of stuff like that.
Yes, we have things, like we call it a thing, that can be literally anything.
It's a heavy, if you could imagine a heavy object that you would hold in your hand that is taped up around and has these funny markers on so the cameras can see it. And it's like, there's a smaller thing and there's a bigger thing.
Yes, and it can be a monster's heart. It can be a witch's grenade.
A rock.
Can be a rock. It can be a witch's trophy of some kind.
Whatever
of
you imagine.
Yeah.
You know?
And
whatever
it's
you
actually
imagine.
Think, because it has it has a shape. But what kind of shape? It's kind of round, but not exactly. So the most important part is it's heavy and you can grab it in one hand. So it can be anything. And later we can put the proper model on that. As I said, that can grenade, heart, and so on.
Mm-hmm. So. All right. Okay, so we someone reaches out to you that they need some animations, right? You have a list of animations, you have a list of props, all the setup you need, and then you need people. So what are the actors performing on? You already mentioned that there's like, depending if that's gameplay or cinematic, right? So how do you get, from where did you get those people?
So basically we usually, it kind of depends also what kind of, if we are recording mock-up or if we are recording performance capture, right? Because like for PerfCap, for PerfCap, we are recording voice at the same time as we are recording the animation. Mm-hmm. For motion capture, we are only recording animation. So only the movement, right? It's not that important to be in a, you know, quiet environment, quiet setup and all of that. And also for the performance capture, we usually work with the English natives. So right now we work mostly with the UK, with UK cast. We're probably going to talk about it later, a little bit more. But when it comes to like, let's say regular shoot, which is a motion capture shoot, we usually work with Polish actors because it's basically the easiest. They are like, you know, most of them live in Warsaw. It doesn't take a lot of time for them to travel to the studio. So basically there are people that worked with us for very long. I would say that some of the people probably worked with us for like 15 years already. Or even more, I would say, probably.
Yes.
And we usually know who is good at what, right? So basically, if we are recording some open world, we know probably in advance, usually in advance, who we would like to work with. If there's like a specific need, so we have some sessions that are unique, let's say, and we need specific performers for that. And I think a good example would be the sumo Polish team that we worked with, or the parkour or gymnasts that we worked with.
Nice.
It's basically the different, depending on what you need, we kind of try to look for, you know, the performer that would be good at it, that we know, or we want to try some kind of solution, you know? So yeah, we usually work with the agencies or, you know, just basically with the actors that we worked before. Or sometimes people just come to the studio and leave their portfolio or just send, you know, portfolio to the email address. And yeah, that's basically how we, you know, work with them.
And I think we have to remember also about stunt performers, because they're also kind of important part of the production, because we are not casting. We are not working with, let's say, a crew from UK or US, because we have our own friends, and they're working with us more than 15 years, so they know exactly what's going on. We don't have to explain the technicalities, but okay, you're a Geralt. Yeah, you're a Geralt. So be a Geralt for the whole shooting day. So that's definitely that's definitely helpful when we are preparing a lot of animations.
They know the drill.
Exactly.
And Tomek, so having in mind all those animations you recorded, is it possible that you look at the animation, a scene in the game, or just a, you know, open world animation, and you can tell which person did the mock-up for that?
Yeah. Actually, yes.
Because people do have very unique way of moving,
yes.
Right?
It's
yeah.
Yes, and also this is the reason why we are trying to have a performer for a specific character, for a specific role, because at the beginning of Cyberpunk, we recorded, for example, Jackie with three different actors, and I'm able to see who was playing when, in which cases, and in that moment, you can see this inconsistency. That okay, right now Jackie is heavy and focused. In that moment, yeah, he's energetic and so on. Okay. So right now, we'd like to have one performer just to have this style, this this mood, sometimes, you know, this
a repetitive performance.
Exactly, exactly. So I'm able to see see it, but also gamers also can see, like, why is he so hyped?
Yeah, the guy is, why is he moving different?
Exactly, like why he's jumping all around.
Yeah. It's too energetic. That's not him for sure. Yeah.
So I can see that, and I'm sure not only me, but I know the reason. But the gamers not always has that kind of knowledge.
Does it always sometimes happen that actors are not aware what exactly they're recording for? Like they don't know specific about the projects?
Or do they just know the thing that they're supposed to like show? Like, oh, do two somersaults and end it with, I don't know, something. And then you don't tell them like what it is specifically for. Or do you tell them specifically that this is for this game, this is this scene? How much do you give them insight?
Maybe.
A lot, I would say. So basically at the, usually at the stage of casting, we don't tell them what the project is that we are casting for or what they're going to be actually performing. We usually also sometimes use the code names for the characters that we cast for because we just don't want people to, you know, basically talk about it. No, basically that a CDP is casting for some specific project or something like that. So usually we use code names. And then when we meet with them in person, then we tell them, okay, this is what we are casting for or this is what we are recording for.
After signing an NDA, of course.
Of course, after signing an NDA. And, you know, I just feel, and I guess like my team would also agree that it's just fair because like how can someone do a good job if they don't know who they are playing, right? Or who they are performing as. Mm. So they usually know the context. Sometimes, of course, we ourselves don't know the whole setup or the whole, you know, let's say scene because, you know, it's being iterated, like rewrote and, you know, all of this kind of stuff is being still like in a review process, but we kind of know, okay, this is the intention that we are going for. This is the character that you're playing and we expect you to perform this or that, right? Mm-hmm. So I would say we try to share as much as we can.
And does it always require an actor or sometimes people from the team are actually performing as well?
Tomek himself.
Yeah. You're Geralt.
No.
Okay. We just wanted to tell you guys that Tomek was actually Geralt.
Yeah.
No, I wasn't. But I had a chance to play Jackie in a few scenes.
Which Jackie?
That's why he's been mentioning Jackie all the time.
Exactly, yeah.
He's already in. He loves that character. Yeah. He soaked it up.
But which version of Jackie? You know,
like you're just... a live version of Jackie. but we are deciding to, you know, to hire the professionalists, and that's our cases. Sometimes when we need to prototype something, and we let's record something really fast, and to be sure that maybe this character should be bigger or smaller, that we are asking people from studio to do such a thing, but mostly for
another,
for a pre-visualization. for the final and production data. Right now, we are focusing on hiring stunt performers, actors, or people who can do weird things, or when they have special abilities like sumo fighters or someone who is extreme
Krav Maga,
sword master. Exactly, that's a great example. And if someone from studio is a sword master, then yeah, feel free. You're invited. Yeah. Someone from studio has a special ability.
Yeah.
I mean, we worked a little bit with people from CDP. Usually, you know, when we try to look for something specific, I would say like climbing can be a good example, I would say. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we're going to reach out to some, you know, I don't know, people who usually climb or, I don't know, go to some climbing club or something like that. We usually try, when we, yeah, look for something, search for something specific, like some specific skill, we usually just put a message, you know, to our like folks and, hey, is anyone, you know, interested or can anyone would like to join the sessions?
But in the, let's say, regular cinematic or gameplay, we are focusing on working with professional stunt performers and actors.
If you ever need someone riding a bike, let me know.
Sure.
Yeah, a cyclist somewhere. Yeah, that'd be cool.
And the animal actors.
Yeah, what I was going to say, like, what are the weird things that you kind of recorded or kind of out of the ordinary, let's say, because we know, like, humans, you already mentioned that, of course, we have athletes, we have stunt actors, we have normal actors, but also you've done some animals, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Tomek, you want
to? Yes. We recorded dog as our first animal.
Well-trained dog.
Well-trained dog. That was a pleasure. Literally, to work with this dog. And later we had a chance to record a horse. Actually, that was not a chance. That was full, almost 1 week shooting with a horse for upcoming Witcher game.
Great. Did it happen in our studio?
Not in our studio, but with our cameras and our gear, we had to disassemble the whole studio, pack it, go to the stables, reassemble everything, calibrate, prepare horses, record everything in a few days, then once again, disassemble everything, pack it, bring back to the studio, clean everything, and reassemble. Really easy process.
And calibrate. Yeah. I heard that calibration is not the easy part there. Right?
Yes, this is the magical word, because if we had to explain something, we have to calibrate. And like everyone is
lunch
yes.
break. Yeah. Well, we're calibrating right now.
Yes. So it was a kind of big thing with a horse. But we are really proud of proud of it, and that's
what we saw so far on Unreal Fest. That was amazing.
Yeah. That was a real horse recorded. Yes, no harm was caused. That is worth to mention.
Yeah, I think that's the most important thing, because we could not bring the horse in because we have stairs here and horses don't really do stairs. So taking everything to the stable was a big achievement. I remember everybody was kind of gossiping on the corridors of the studio, like, you know what. Mocap did what? They took the cameras to a stable and they're recording a horse. A horse, really? For what? For Witcher 4? We're like, oh my God, they're recording a horse. So it's like, you know, it's something out of the ordinary and something that you don't think that is even possible, but in the end, it actually is.
For us, that was also a big deal. Yeah. And as I said, the whole team was really, really proud of that. So.
Yeah. I would say we put a lot of preparation in making that happen. Yeah. I would say, like as you mentioned, like the horse was here, let's say at the campus, because we wanted to do some initial tests to kind of check if the ideas that we have and kind of the way of how we imagine this is going to work, it's going to actually work. So we wanted to kind of check and test it before we actually spent more money on, you know, basically organizing the full session.
Mm-hmm. So. I guess the horse was not wearing a suit.
No, but that was our, let's say, plan A, and we bought
We actually have a horse suit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and it looked like a Batman, Bat Horse.
Bat Horse.
Yeah, with two people inside. Man.
No, but you know, that it was pink. So, so we decided, no, it doesn't look good in the camera. So, so we prepared with, we prepared everything with veterinary kinesio tape. Everything was checked. Oh, wow. Everything was checked by vets. That is it safe and so on, just to be sure that first things first, is it safe? Second thing, yeah, if it's designed for a horse, then probably it will work.
It's gonna work, yeah, yeah. As you were asking in the beginning, how much time in advance we need to actually, you know, have the information on how long does it take to actually prepare something. This is a thing. Like for the horse session, it took us like 1 year of prep, at least, I think. It was kind of like initiated that, okay, we want to record a horse animation, you know, start thinking about it. And then we started thinking about it, kind of like, you know, looking for a space and then kind of figuring out, okay, how we want to attach the markers to the animal, what kind of animal we want to have, right? So we actually work with the trained horses that usually just, yeah, basically perform at the movie sets that, you know, they have like in Poland, and with, yeah, the trained crew. So yeah, it took us a lot of time to actually come up with all of this stuff and do like iterations on all of the ideas and all. So yeah.
And how to recreate the studio in a kind of savage,
harsh environment.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So. Because the cameras are usually placed on the frames, so the no vibration from the walls is affecting them, right?
Exactly. And the cameras are just hanging, and they are in one place, and please don't touch them. Everything should be safe. And we're talking about stables, so also animals.
Yeah. A lot of dust.
Dust and dirt. So on, because you know, people are just riding a horse. Surprisingly, so how to design everything to protect the cameras, and from the other side to record the horse, because horse should feel
comfortable in its own environment.
Exactly. Natural, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. We talk a lot about the suits, but could you explain to someone like what a typical mocap suit looks like? Because it's also very interesting, because we can totally tell in the studio when you guys are recording, because when the actors actually have a lunch break, they come in wearing these funny suits and they eat lunch with us. So could you explain kind of how that works and how the camera actually sees it?
So, okay, I can explain. The easiest way to explain is it's like a really tight pajama. Literally, it looks like a pajamas. And everything is made from, you know, from Velcro, so we can easily attach the markers. We mentioned a few times this word marker, and we can attach the markers in the proper places. So what's marker? Marker is a spherical piece of rubber covered with reflective tape. That's it. Really, I mean,
simple.
I mean, this is actually really simple. And they're placed on performer body, for example, on the top of a head, on arms or on on legs, just to inform system, us as mock-up people and the system, where are the actual animation bones of
joints,
the actor?
Yeah.
Joints. Mm-hmm. Thank you. This is kind of weird to explain. Much easier is when you can see that. But every marker is responsible for giving us an info about rotation of the joint, the length of the bone. So a combination of markers can explain the length of, for example, of the whole arm. One marker is just a point, but for example, three markers can tell us, yeah, this is, for example, a hand. This part is a head. This part is responsible for being a foot, for example. We need some markers on the suit.
And the cameras are probably infrared, right?
Yes.
They see only the markers, and it works like GPS basically. So you need at least three cameras to see one point to triangulate the position, but. Why so many cameras then?
Yeah, because actually, you need only two cameras because we as a human beings, we have only two eyes and we can also navigate more or less in 3D. So in edge cases, we can use only two cameras, but three cameras can focus on small space. But if you would like to record runs, that different cameras can be responsible for different parts of environment. Mm-hmm. I mean, for example, from the entrance for the stage, three or four cameras are responsible for that part, and they're not focusing on the other side of a studio. So we need plenty of them to be sure that every point in environment is covered by a camera, even if we are preparing, as we mentioned, like some kind of environments, like a table, chairs, maybe some kind of cars and so on, even if some part of environment is covered by a scenography, other cameras can...
Like the tank.
Exactly. Like in the tank.
Okay. All right. So that's for the body. And what about, for example, so complex objects like hands or mock-up the face? We all know probably, you know, the pictures from Avatar and the recording of people with dots on the face, cameras here, helmet.
I think it's also very now popular in games. Everybody talks about like performance capture. And actually, they always show these actors with this like blue light on them when like markers and stuff like that. So yeah. How about complex things like Bobo said?
I mentioned about performance capture, and you also asked about that. Yes, we have HMCs, so helmets with cameras, and we are recording faces. That's why we are recording with English natives, because we would like to record their bodies, their face, and their voice, everything together. That's kind of important thing when you are recording everything in sync. It's much easier to get the proper animation, and you don't have to focus on combining different different inputs like a voice, face, and body. So we are recording that, and also we have gloves. This is kind of slightly different system. There's some different providers. But you have something like a special glove with magnetic sensors, and you can just record changing of fingers positions. Sometimes it's easy to synchronize. Sometimes not. but also we are working on that. To get the full performance capture all complex.
Okay. Because I remember usually that when you see the mockup data, the hands are stiff, right? But it's because we have, for example, some overlay animations for animating the hands, or we have the animators who like to, you know, make the hand performance separately later in the production, right? Or we, for example, you're using the thing prop and you don't have the real prop, and then the animator anyway has to adjust the hands and the fingers to something that the character will be actually holding that will be discovered probably later in the process.
Yes. Previously, the solution, which is working pretty good with a full body, sometimes has some issues with fingers. Mm-hmm. So that's why we have separate system only for fingers. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we are using it when it's, let's say, necessary. And sometimes when it's not necessary, we can, record it faster without focusing on fingers when, as you mentioned, we don't know what will be in the end, so probably animator will have to fix it anyway. So we are finishing with a shovel hands, we call it like that.
I like that you asked about hands, because I feel for an artist always talk about how to capture perfect hands so they look lifelike, and I think it's the same with animating. That it's very hard to animate real life sometimes, and actually getting the complex movements that we have in our hands. I have to ask this question because it always comes up. What about A-listers and stuff like that? How do we do people like Keanu, like Idris, and all that stuff? Because that feels like the glamorous part of capturing actors.
We cannot tell.
I can tell one thing that, you know, we are in right now in Poland, so recording Keanu Reeves in Poland, or, you know, spotting
him on the campus.
On the campus, spotting him on our, you know, Warsaw airport.
Without raising any suspicion.
Yes, I mean, someone for sure will recognize him. So the whole, you know, reveal will be pointless. So to avoid such a case, we are trying to find other solutions, but we have it in mind, and maybe one day we'll be able to record them here in Warsaw. Because this is, as I said, this is cool.
I think everybody in the studio would go crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I would tell you that probably more of the preparations goes into this kind of shoots, because, you know, you don't want to waste anybody's time. Mm-hmm. And basically because of the calendar is so packed, you don't want to kind of, you know, book anymore, or you don't actually have any other day that you can book with people of, you know, this profile. But basically I would say, often we sometimes like use stunt doubles or just doubles in general. Mm-hmm. So basically we kind of iterate on the material that we record. And then when we have the final version of the scene or something, then we go and actually record with A-listers. Yeah. But that's, I believe, all that we can say.
Mm-hmm. Who's A-lister? I have no idea.
Yeah, but I'm not wasting a moment. That's also a very important thing, I guess. Our studio is a very creative place. People running around, walking, talking, dogs barking.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Crazy stuff going on there. When you enter the mock-up session, when it actually happens, you know, it's like you are in this magnificent, beautiful, fascinating place, but there's all the rules around, you know, don't touch this, don't go in there, don't say that, be quiet, you know, etc. So it's because
it's also very clean.
Yeah, it's also very clear, right? It's like a NASA facility or some military facility. So I feel like that, you know? So it's because we don't want to waste a minute, right?
I would say so. It's, you know, as a producer, I need to say all comes to the budget. So because of so many people joining the session and basically being there, and, you know, you want to have the job done, mm-hmm. basically, right? You want to record what you plan to record. Sometimes we are able to record even more that we planned, sometimes not really. So it all comes to like, okay, yeah, let's follow the rules. Let's follow the plan. We do as much as we can, put as much effort as we can to record everything. And, you know, then you can see the outcome. It is a creative process. So, you know, it's not always, doesn't always go, let's say, as planned. But I would say, yeah, everyone here tries to do their best and, you know, deliver as much as possible. But yeah, I wouldn't say I see it as a, you know, the NASA lab or anything like that. Especially when you're in the middle and kind of responsible and, you know that there is a delay, or, you know, mm-hmm. someone like has a problem with something, or the tech doesn't work. Uh-huh. So it's actually a lot of stuff that, you know, I would say you need to have these rules to kind of make your work easier. Because if, you know, you have a rules that people follow and some part doesn't work, then you're it's easier to spot the thing that doesn't work and then maybe, you know, bring it mm-hmm. back to life or fix it.
And I will add also a thing that the shooting day in our studio, this is a moment when a lot of people are involved at the same mm-hmm. time. And someone is responsible for preparing actors. Someone else is responsible for preparing the system. Someone else is checking the scripts and so on. So you need the rules to put some kind of boundaries and mm-hmm. Directions that, okay, we are here and everyone is responsible for the success of the shooting day. So we have to know mm-hmm. what to do.
Yeah.
If everyone is like, okay, let's do something, then probably everyone will do their things, but we don't know what's mm-hmm. behind that. Then, and if we have rules, okay, we have, mm-hmm. I don't know, 20 minutes to prepare actors, then other people from different teams. Okay, so we have 20 minutes to brief them, the actors, or to prepare some kind of materials. So everyone knows where are they in the, let's say, pipeline. So it's mm-hmm. really helpful to manage and to get what we want. Yeah.
I would say it's so much harder to manage, you know, the crew when you have like a bigger shoot. So performance capture, let's say, because you have lots of people coming from abroad. You need to explain some stuff. Sometimes people are, you know, it's their first time on a mock-up stage. So you also need to tell me if it's actually the, let's say, person responsible for introducing everyone to these rules that you mentioned. And sometimes you have the shoot that is very easy. You have only one performer, especially when it comes to like gameplay stuff. And, you know, people know each other so well because sometimes they worked with each other for like, 10 years and there is not really an input needed. And these rules are kind of like, you know, already in your blood. So you don't need to remind anyone about this or, you know. Yeah.
Okay.
How about the feedback loop during a session? Like, for example, an actor is doing something. You're like, no, let's do it differently. Let's do it this way. Is it like instantaneous that you kind of see something and then, or do you just have like one director that is on set that is directing the actors, or is the actor getting like multiple inputs from different people? Like how does it look?
I would say it shouldn't look like this.
Yeah.
So you probably what you want, you would like to have one person responsible for giving the feedback to the crew, to the cast actually, and being responsible for the vision that you want to execute. So if you want to record something, then okay, this is one person that I know, it's my POC, the person that, you know, gives me feedback or gives me some kind of
POC,
advice.
POC, that's military talk, by the way. Contact. You were onto something.
I would say you probably want to have like one director responsible for the session, right? And then like the other people are usually like animators or designers. They come and, you know, advise you and so on. But I would say one person is probably preferable.
Yeah, because like you mentioned, the crew is always getting like bigger and bigger depending like how many people. Yeah. Because sometimes, you know, when you're creating a scene, you have input from multiple departments that are kind of working on one thing. So you probably also have like a lot of people having their own input. So does it then all that input go to one person, that person passes it on to the actor, and then the actor recreates that once again?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I would say, you know, I'm not going to lie, it's challenging because of, you know, let's say you have 20 people on stage together with the talent, right? So sometimes, you know, there is a camera operator or, I don't know, AD that wants you to, you know, introduce some kind of change or whatever, like basically give some feedback. So it, of course, it happens that sometimes it's a little bit chaotic and challenging, but, you know, we are kind of trying to kind of go in a good direction and introduce it more and more. That's why the rules are, you know, being introduced.
It all sounds like a movie set, basically.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Like a movie set. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So awesome. what's down in the future for mocap? If you had to like think about it, like what's going to probably change here, or is nothing going to change, or is just the scope going to be bigger because now you need to kind of cater to multiple IPs and games that we're working on? Like how do you see the future for yourself?
You can start.
I would say probably the multi-project approach, it's going to be a challenge. It is a little bit of a challenge now, as we see. We try to introduce some new rules on the fly and basically kind of deal with that and, you know, what is the priority here, or kind of talk to the projects more often. And basically, I would say we are in more convenient environment than like outsourced studios because we are all the time in the same environment as the project is. So, you know, on a daily basis, we can just talk to them, you know, organize a meeting, ask about something. So I would say we are more flexible.
And I think you're part of the DNA also of the studio, and you also understand the language that everybody is speaking. Because I think with working with outsources, like, how do we calibrate and how do we understand each other that we're kind of speaking the same language?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry,
I would recommend to, you know, to the studios have their own mock-up sets, let's say. Because also you can record, you know, more stuff that you would probably record in the outsource because it's just cheaper, let's say. So I would say, what is the future for me from the production perspective? I would say make it work that we can provide mock-up services, you know, to all of the projects. And, you know, as we said, the motion capture studio is booked a few months in advance, so it's going to be a challenge, but we'll see. Everyone, you know, hands on deck. And
In the future, definitely that will be busy time. I hope.
Yeah.
And I see that. We are testing right now. I will tell more about technicalities. We are testing different systems. Let's say even coming back to to the weird suits with a PC on the back.
Oh, really?
Right now with definitely smaller computers on the back, just to give a chance to animators to record like a some ideas, pre-visualizations at the desk and check it, make a fast iterations and record only the final decisions on the big stage and record only the cases that we know that are important for the game, not all all variations. Thanks to that, we can reduce the scope and give other projects space to record their stuff. And I think this is the main idea.
Each animator gets a mech suit that is a computer that lets them record animation at their desk. That would be really cool. That'd be really cool.
No, because
I could totally see it.
Yeah. We would be unemployed.
No, the final shoot needs to be done on the stage.
The draft.
I think you're good too far, slightly too far. But I mean, no promises from my side. But we are, as I said, testing different solutions just to improve the process because this is, I think, never-ending story that always we can do it better. That's why we are trying to feedback also ourselves and to find, okay, this or that we can do better or can we do it, you know, by hand right now or we need another staff. Maybe we have invest in something or maybe we don't have to spend time and money for changing the pipelines. Maybe we can work more efficient and so on. So in the future, definitely we have to focus on multi-project approach and to, you know, to help deliver the games, multiple games.
Yeah. What type of skills does a person need to have in order to work in mocap? Because on the production side, I imagine it's like you need to kind of understand how a set works and you also need to understand how pipeline works, how game development more or less works and all that stuff and how to collaborate with teams. But what about also like working on stage and stuff like that? It's like, it's a very specific set of like, you know, tools and experience that you need to have and know in order to be part of a crew like that.
So I think if we mentioned about that, that we are preparing like a scenography. So someone who can work with wood. I know that's maybe weird. Okay, we are talking about games, but someone who can work with tools, with wood, or sometimes we have someone who can change in clothes and prepare our own costumes. For example, we need
totally like a movie set, like everything I'm hearing is like this is absolutely like film industry.
And from the other side, we have programmers, because some exporting data, we can do everything of course by hand, but then probably the projects will have to wait till the 2077 for the materials and data. What skills? Everything, literally everything.
I would say so.
From manual things through the digital, knowledge how to model, because we need to print props also. So sometimes we have to change it to add some additional place for, I don't know, weight to have the prop more heavy. I know the answer is really generic, like, we need everything. Of course, it's not like one person who should know everything, but there's always a place in our team that can require very unusual skills, and we can find a job for such a person.
Perfect. Awesome. I think we have it.
Yeah.
Unless you have any more questions that you want to ask. I think we should kind of end also on like a favorite story from the mocap set, or your favorite, I don't know,
crazy
cinematic that you did, or something crazy that happened. I don't know. Just give me one story. We already had some examples. Like I liked the hamster in the washing machine for the tech demo. I know you did some weird monsters also walking on, like people walking on all four limbs and then becoming like a monster and stuff. Like, what else is there? We talked about the horse, the dog. Any other examples?
To be honest, I would say horse and a dog are like pretty memorable, let's say, because it's, you know, something different. Mm-hmm. I remember also my first mock-up session was a stunt session after just a day after I joined CDP. So it was also pretty fun to watch, or, you know, all of the kinds of fights that are happening.
Yeah.
Also open world, I would say it's pretty mm-hmm. fun to watch because you always have some NPC doing some weird thing, you know, that you actually need to record. So yeah, but I would say probably animals. So I would say horse mm-hmm. session for me.
And for me, I already mentioned a romance scene in the tank.
that one.
I think this
player's favorite.
Yes, it was really challenging to prepare that. So I think this is my top one. And also, of course, but it was mentioned already. And I think I have some others, but I will, maybe one day I will reveal that.
Diaries, you know.
Yes. But
Tomek's diary.
Yeah, my diaries. But there's a lot of shooting days. Even, the boring one were really, really encouraging and, you know, can give a value to the game because someone is doing something cool somewhere in the background.
I'm surprised you haven't mentioned how we record swimming. So having someone on a chair without a backrest, kind of like being suspended and swimming, swimming.
You know, different, just separated block of like, okay, ideas how to record specific mock-up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The guide, cool. The guide.
That's super interesting.
Your creativity. Yeah. Awesome.
Yes. I think that will be in my, you know, my diaries in the future.
Yeah.
You've mentioned about the swimming. We tested also, this is small, also disclaimer, we tested on the ropes and actually the office chair without the backrest was much better than
swimming in ropes.
Fortunately, unfortunately.
Yeah. All right, before we finish, one more thing, because I know the mocap team is watching. Do we want to send our regards in some way, form or fashion?
Absolutely. Tomek?
Yes, definitely, because, you know, they're waiting just behind the door. we just promised that, yeah, we'll say something like, hi, mom, I'm in TV. So, guys, you're doing great job and thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. Nothing would happen without you, so...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Awesome. Perfect. All right. And we're off now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See ya.
Thank you for tuning in and listening to our podcast. I hope you heard a lot of interesting information and insights about how the mocap sessions are performed here in CDPR.
And as always, don't forget to comment, like, subscribe, all that jazz, and let us know what you're thinking about the episodes. And of course, we'll see you on the next one.
Bye.